Hello and welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. First, let's get started with beer news. After 18 years of operation, Cassock's Brewery has closed its doors. The announcement was made on Friday, August 30th at the brewery's end-of-season party. The reason given was the unaffordability of rent in its current location. The brewery tap room remained open until Sunday, September 15th, selling off the remaining beer and merchandise at reduced prices. The brewery will continue to provide beer for Kenai Brown Bear hockey games. The owners have stated that they hope to reopen in the spring in a new location in downtown Kenai, though the brewery will be under a new name. Seward Brewing Company closed for the season on Sunday, September 1st. It will reopen next spring. Calgon Homebrew Supplies closed permanently on Saturday, August 31st. Anchorage Brewing Company has announced the date for the annual release of its award-winning barley wine, A Deal with the Devil. The beer will be released at the brewery on Saturday, October 19th. If you're interested, you should start making plans now. The 2024 Alaska Crafted Conference will be held from November 14th through November 16th in downtown Anchorage at 49th State Brewing. We'll have much more info about this with our guest this month, Stephanie Haskins of the Brewers Guild of Alaska. The Alaska Crafted Festival will take place on the afternoon of Saturday, November 16th at Willowaw in downtown Anchorage. Stay tuned for more details. That's it for this month's beer news. Up next, we'll have an interview with Stephanie Haskins, the Executive Director of the Brewers Guild of Alaska. This is KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna.
Alaska voters, planning to vote on November 5th? Remember to bring your ID to the polls. If you've got an unexpired photo ID like a driver's license, state ID, or hunting or fishing license issued by any state, or a passport or military ID, you're all set. Or present a non-photo ID that shows your name and current address like a utility bill, paycheck, or bank statement. To learn more, call or text the Vote Writers helpline at 866-ID-2-VOTE or visit voteriders.org.
Stephanie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. How are you, Bill?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. So for those of our listeners who might not be familiar with it, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Brewers Guild of Alaska is, what it does, and what your role is there?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So the Brewers Guild of Alaska has been around since 2000. We are a collection of breweries and now wineries, including meaderies and cideries, as well as distilleries around the state. And we're really a trade advocacy group. So we do a lot of different programs and things for our members. Some of that is educational, providing seminars and talks to our members about different technical aspects of brewing, marketing, really anything that has to do with running the business of a brewery or a distillery, cidery, meadery. We also do legislative advocacy. So I'm sure a lot of your listeners heard about SB9 several years ago. That was the big Title IV rewrite that changed some of the liquor laws that we have here in Alaska. Some of those changes did directly affect a lot of our members who operate tap rooms and kind of smaller operations by allowing them to stay open an hour later until 9 o'clock. There were some changes that had to do with licensing as well. And then other work that the Brewers Guild of Alaska does is networking. Alaska is very unique in a lot of ways. One of those being that we are just geographically very far from each other, very separated. But nowadays, with everyone being online, Zoom being possible, it's really become easier than ever to connect people from a distance. So one of the things that we do is just have a monthly board meeting. That's a time for us to come together, talk about the issues that are facing our organization. But then we do in-person events as well, such as our upcoming Alaska Crafted Conference. That'll be a great opportunity for folks to meet face-to-face with other members, as well as with vendors and suppliers who work with our industry.
So tell us a little more about this conference that's coming up in November.
So I've got a couple of different fall events coming up, one of which is the Alaska Crafted Conference that I mentioned. So this is now kind of the, I believe, the fourth year that we've had this program going, and we've continued to build it each year. But this is a program that we offer to our members. This year, it is open to non-members as well. So if you are someone who works with a non-member brewery, or if you're just a craft beer aficionado who wants to learn more about the industry, you're welcome to attend this conference if you would like as well. This year's Alaska Crafted Conference will be a two-day event. It'll be November 14th and 15th in Anchorage. It'll be hosted at one of our member breweries, 49th State, their downtown Anchorage pub. And the first of the two-day event is going to be our annual industry trade show. And we'll have a ton of different suppliers who do all manner of different things with craft brewers as well as other craft beverage manufacturers. So we'll have folks there from malt supply companies. We've got a terrific variety of different hop vendors as well. They'll be showcasing not only different varietals of hops, including some newer ones that are coming to the market, but also some new advanced hop products. So things like Flex that Haas offers, different products that are really like, you know, the goods from the hops, the essences of them, things like that are really of interest to our members, just in that here in Alaska, we have to have everything shipped up. Sadly, you can't really grow hops very well here. Even if you could, there's not a facility in place to process them. And it is really expensive to ship up raw materials that, you know, you're going to use that. And then with hops specifically, you know, end up tossing out a lot of the vegetal matter. So showcasing products like this that are really just, you know, the oils and the extracts, really the things in the hops that you want without the vegetal matter that you're just going to toss out. That's way cheaper for members to bring up here. It makes it so that they can make more cost-effective products and pass those savings on to the consumers, and also just continue creating new and more interesting beers. Other vendors will have folks that are showcasing different merchandise. Everyone wants their breweries to look super cool, different yeast producers as well. So really just a tremendous variety of different suppliers. And that's just day one. And of course, this being hosted at 49th State, we'll have a ton of great beers available for folks to enjoy while they take in all those suppliers. And then the second day is going to be our educational seminar day. And if anyone is curious about this year's talks, we have the full schedule available at our website, brewersguildofalaska.org. And this year's talks include speakers from Freedom Family Brewers in Hood River, Oregon. We're going to have some homegrown ones as well. Lee Ellis from Midnight Sun Brewing is going to be talking about some of the regulatory changes that have happened, as well as Sarah Perez from Susitna Brewing is going to have a talk there. Some other out-of-state speakers that we'll have include Joe Catron from Yakima Chief Ranches. They do a ton of really fascinating work with hop breeding and breeding new varietals that not only showcase different things that people want in hops, you know, higher alpha acids, different flavor and aroma compounds, but also ones that are drought resistant, ones that are going to be more resistant to different fungi or bacteria that could be detrimental to hops. And then one that I'm really interested in is a talk that the head brewer and marketing director of Fort George Brewery out of Astoria, Oregon, are going to talk about their annual three-way IPA collaboration. So anyone who's tuned into the greater craft beer industry is probably familiar with this beer. It's an annual release that they do, as the name implies. It's three different breweries who come together, and every year they brew a different style of IPA. The recipe changes completely. The collaborators also change each year, with Fort George being the only constant. I know that I personally love to see collaboration at my own brewery. That's something that we really pride ourselves on, is collaborating frequently with our friends, both in-state and out-of-state, to learn from each other, make something fun and interesting, and really continue building that community. So that trade show, the seminar day, and then we cap it all off with the award ceremony and an industry reception. The award ceremony is for this year's AK Beer Awards competition, which, again, this will be the fourth year that we've hosted this competition. And this year we've added new categories, both for beer as well as for cider and mead. We have 23 different categories this year, which is the most that we've ever offered. We have judges from across the industry. Everything is judged double blind. And then this year we'll be again hosting the award ceremony at 49th State Brewing Company. Country Malt Group's John Burkett is going to be our master of ceremonies. He did so last year and did an awesome job. We had a ton of fun with it. And then this year, one of the hop suppliers that will be featuring at the trade show, Hopsteiner, is helping us out with the award ceremony as well. They're going to treat everyone to a beer and some snacks. And then they're also collaborating with 49th State to brew a new beer that will be debuting at the awards ceremony. So I'm really, really excited about that. I can't wait to try the beer. So that's the conference in a nutshell. And then we chase that with the Alaska Crafted Festival on Saturday, November 16th. That's in addition to the conference. Of course, even if craft beer maybe isn't your thing, we will have mead there. We'll have ready-to-drink cocktails. We'll have cider there as well. So hopefully something for everyone. And that will be hosted at Willowaw Social. We'll have live music there as well as a DJ. Food will be available from the Willowaw Kitchen. And then we'll also have some raffle tickets available for our upcoming raffles. So it's a really packed weekend. That's all coming up November 14th through 16th in Anchorage. And then for those Fairbanks folks, we've also got a festival coming up in the interior. Here in Fairbanks, we'll be hosting the Boots and Brews Beer Fest on Friday, October 11th. This will be the second year that we've done that festival. Last year was the first year and it was a huge success. We partnered with our friends at Denali State Bank here in Fairbanks to throw a big event. We had a bunch of Fairbanks exclusives, some of our member breweries who hadn't ever showcased their products in Fairbanks before. We had Devil's Club Brewing Company last year, Girdwood Brewing Company, Two Seasons Meadery came up here for the first time, quite a few other firsts. So this year we're going to be hosting the event at the assembly room at the Birch Hill Recreation Area, which if anyone is familiar with it, it is an awesome venue. It is very, very cool. Neat indoor space, great outdoor space. And we'll have the fire pits going. If anyone wants to hang out outdoors, we'll have some tunes going indoors. So we hope that everyone will join us for a good time, whether you're in Fairbanks or Anchorage.
Sounds like a great time. I'm going to be out of state for the Fairbanks one, but I'm definitely planning to be there for the conference in Anchorage in November. How about a little background on you? How did you end up as executive director of the BGA?
I've been involved in the Brewers Guild essentially the whole time that I've worked in Alaska's craft beer industry. For my own part, I've worked in craft beer for the last 12 and a half years. I've worked in several states. I started in Washington. I've also done some work in Idaho and Arizona before heading up here to Alaska. And then just about, 7 years ago now, I moved up to Fairbanks with my husband, Carrie, and we opened up with our business partner, Jake, Black Spruce Brewing Company here in Fairbanks. And then I served as the vice president of the Brewers Guild's board of directors up until a little over a year ago when I transitioned into being the executive director. And in doing that, it does incorporate a lot of the things that I personally do at Black Spruce anyway, which is a lot of event organization, kind of bringing folks together. Just different industry connections that I've made through the years have been really helpful. And that translates really well to the Brewers Guild, where I do a lot of networking. As I mentioned, that's one of the services that we offer to our members, but also doing event planning, planning the festivals and conference that I mentioned earlier. We also do a couple different raffles through the year. And then we introduced a new event in Palmer this summer as well. And then also just doing fundraising and then starting to work on our legislative advocacy more and more, because as I'm sure a lot of your listeners are well aware, Alaska has some rather unusual laws compared to the rest of the U.S. When it comes to breweries, distilleries, and wineries. And so we would love to see those laws be changed and be a little bit friendlier to our members. So that's something that we'll continue to work on, and I'll continue to work on. Those laws are something that certainly directs my business very directly. And so I'm eager to do my part and help out. And hopefully we can make a little bit of a friendlier environment for our craft breweries and our friends.
Sounds great. Well, hey, Stephanie, thank you for taking time out of your busy day to talk with us. I really appreciate it. And like I said, I look forward to seeing you in November at the Crafted Conference.
Yeah, thanks so much for your time, Bill, and for letting me talk up our upcoming events. Again, if anyone has any questions about any of our events, check out brewersguildofalaska.org. You can find us on social media as well, and I hope everyone will join us for our fall events.
This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.
Celebrate local food at the Harvest Moon Local Food Festival, Saturday, September 21st at Soldotna Creek Park. From 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., enjoy farm and food vendors, demonstrations, kids' activities, a pie baking contest, the famous fermentation station, and live music featuring the Kenai Peninsula Brass Band at 5 p.m. KenaiLocalFood.org for details. This message sponsored by Kenai Local Food Connection with support from Tote Maritime.
Earlier in the news segment of this show, I mentioned that Anchorage Brewing Company will soon be holding its annual release of its A Deal with the Devil barley wine. That got me thinking that perhaps it's time to speak again about the secondary beer market. The term secondary beer market refers to beers that are purchased and then resold by individuals other than licensed distributors and retailers. It's a bit of a gray market, as these transactions are technically illegal, since any sale of alcohol requires licenses from various levels of government, but are typically occurring on such a small scale that it isn't worth anyone's time to try to enforce the laws against it. If you know where to look online, you can find various rare beers for sale for tens or even hundreds of times their original retail price. Opportunistic sellers in the alcohol space are nothing new. It's been commonplace in wine for decades. The same is true for spirits. But the craft beer industry's relatively young age, coupled with an increasing number of small breweries that are creating world-class beers in limited quantities, means there's more demand than there is supply. For those lucky enough to get their hands on a bottle or two, the temptation to sell it well beyond the manufacturer's suggested retail price is often a pull too strong to resist. A primary topic of discussion surrounding the secondary beer market is the prices that people pay. In the wine industry, it's less shocking when someone spends hundreds or even thousands on a bottle. In the rare whiskey trade, prices are even higher. Why can't beer be the same? The secondary market and inflated prices aren't going to normalize the concept of high-end beer prices in the mainstream, but we could become far more accepting of beer as a luxury item. However, while the desire to obtain such beers might just be for the love of them, it can also be related to the status they convey to the buyer. Being able to brag about having sampled some of the so-called white whales of craft beer can give the same sort of ego boost that driving an expensive car or name-dropping celebrity friends does. The antipathy of others towards beer being treated as a status symbol is also understandable. People get riled when someone has enough money that they don't need to bother with standing in line to purchase rare beers on the release date, but can instead pick them up on the secondary market for an inflated price. The same goes for people who buy beers because it reflects how they want to be seen. It's like people spending a lot of money on wine, whiskey, clothes, or cars. However, this clashes with many people's perceptions of what beer should be and how it should be enjoyed. As you might imagine, few brewers are pleased by the idea of someone buying a bottle of one of their beers for $20 and then turning around and reselling it for $150. It's only natural that the brewer, who is working hard to keep their business profitable, pay their employees, and provide them benefits like health insurance, would be irritated when they see someone earning 100 times the brewer's profit margin by simply reselling a beer illegally. Apart from the loss and potential profit that breweries face, the other major issue is that of quality. Understanding the importance of freshness and of appropriate cellaring and storage is not universal among beer drinkers around the world. There are no positives in people paying exorbitant prices for a beer if it's been stored poorly or cellared when it was brewed to be enjoyed fresh. Pity the poor brewer that sees his hoppy beer sold for 3 times the retail price a year later and then gets to read the negative review left on a beer site by the disgruntled drinker. Brewers fight back in a variety of ways. These days, many of the most sought-after beers are only sold directly by the brewery, with sales being limited to 1 or 2 bottles per customer. For example, it wasn't that many years ago when you could find Anchorage Brewing Company's A Deal with the Devil barley wine for sale at package stores around Anchorage following its yearly release. Local beer aficionados would drive around town hoovering them up for their beer cellars. These days, if you want a bottle, the only way to get one legitimately is to stand in line outside the brewery for several hours on the beer's release day before being allowed inside to make your limited purchase. Despite the best efforts of breweries like Anchorage, many people try to skirt the bottle limit rules so that they can quickly turn their purchases around online for a profit. Folks bring spouses, uninterested or on the wagon friends, even grandparents with them to snag extra bottles that they have no intention of drinking. There are even websites and forums where people offer to stand in line for others for a substantial fee so that the secondary market traders don't even need to leave the Saturday morning comfort of a couch and pajamas at home. Here's an example. As I mentioned earlier, Anchorage Brewing released its 2022 A Deal with the Devil Double Oaked Barley Wine at noon on March 19th, 2022. Less than 24 hours later, with zero effort, I found it on offer online for triple the price at the brewery. I've talked to Anchorage Brewing Company owner Gabe Fletcher about this sort of thing in the past, and he acknowledged that despite all his efforts, he inevitably sees his limited release beers on offer on the secondary market within a few days at highly inflated prices. There's an argument to be made that once you've paid for a beer, you can do what you like with it. That is the case with other consumer goods, from cars to sneakers to electronics. But it's also clear that sellers have a degree of responsibility when it comes to offering beers on the secondary beer market. Sadly, it's a responsibility that not everyone seems to be equipped to deal with. Personally, I steer clear of the secondary beer market. Over the years, thanks to the generosity of friends, I've been lucky enough to get to sample certain beers that were very hard to obtain and could have commanded some truly amazing prices on the secondary market. After sampling those, as well as thousands of other beers, I can say with confidence I have yet to taste a beer that I thought was worth the prices being asked on the secondary beer market. Throughout history, beer has always been the beverage of the common man and priced accordingly. There are simply too many outstanding beers for sale at reasonable prices for me to be willing to fork over so much of my hard-earned cash for any single beer, no matter how good or rare it might be. So I'd recommend that you steer clear of the secondary market as well. Instead of spending $100 on a bottle purchased online, head over to one of our local package stores or breweries and pick up a nice brew for less than $15 a bottle. Then buy six more just like it. I guarantee you'll enjoy yourself more in the long run. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.
The Kenai Arts Center has Momentum on display in the back gallery through September and into October. Pieces are up for silent auction to benefit the Arts Center. Auction bidding closes at 5 p.m. Friday, October 25th. The center is open from noon to 5 p.m. Wednesdays through Saturdays on Cook Avenue in Old Town Kenai. 907-283-7040 or kenaiartcenter@gmail.com for more information.
Up next, we've got Zach Anderson, the founder and head brewer of Harbor Mountain Brewing in Sitka. Zach, how are you this fine day?
Yeah, I'm doing well, Bill. First of all, thanks for letting me, you know, be on the show with you, and I look forward to chatting. But yeah, it's been a good day so far, just kind of cleaning tanks and getting some stuff planned. I'm going down to Hop Selection or Yakima here this weekend, so I'm kind of getting ready for a little trip.
Oh, that sounds exciting. And of course, cleaning is never done.
No, a glorified janitor often is what I tell people what I am. But yeah, no, I'm pretty excited. So no, everything's going good.
So hey, for any of our listeners who haven't been lucky enough to make it to Sitka and check you out, why don't you describe your operation there to them?
Yeah, that's no problem. So we have our own little tasting room, and then we do distribution, self-distribution on the island here. You know, the island is about 9,000 people year round, and we only have 14 miles of road, so it's a small community. But with all the tourism, you know, there's a lot going on here, and we're lucky to be here. But we have a 7-barrel system, and then we have 14-15-barrel fermenters, and then 3 7-barrels, and then some bright tanks. And essentially, what I like to make is we have 5 production beers, and then everything else are kind of one-offs or things that we want to make. You know, being out here isolated on the island, there isn't a lot of opportunities to get malt and raw materials. So we kind of order based on those production beers and then make other beers around that raw material order. So we specialize in farmhouse beer. I'm making more lager beer. We're hoping to be kind of known for lager beer in the state going forward. Yeah, a lot of dry beer. Our goal is always to make beer that you want more than one of. So we don't make a lot of heavy stuff. We do have hazies and whatnot, but they're on the drier side still. And now we're just getting into fruit fermentation with cider and then other fruits, whether that's rhubarb or berries or other forage goods that you can get around here. And then slowly now getting in this off season into mead and possibly what I like to call country wine, but higher ABV fermented fruits stored in, you know, barrels. So slowly growing and trying to get off island. We did also buy a new canning machine, but anyways, we got some things in motion and just trying to stay local here for Sitka and then see how it goes in the next few years as we kind of get this growth model going.
What are your flagships that you, your, what you call so, their production
beer? Yeah, so our production beer, the beer we always have around, we have five, and it's, we have an oatmeal stout, we have a West Coast Pilsner, a hazy IPA, a West Coast IPA, and then an amber, more of like an alt beer kind of lager beer. But anyways, just an amber lager and two IPAs, a stout, and then a hoppy Pilsner.
That sounds like pretty good coverage. And then you mentioned now you're starting to move into more fruit beers, you said.
Actually, not even beers, though, just straight fermented fruit. So I'm getting into what we're doing is heavy fruit concentrates, whether that's apple, blueberry, or forage goods, and then using champagne yeast most of the time. And then kind of either whether it's dry hopping or adding Brett in the secondary in barrels, but some kind of esoteric or more one-off, you know, fruit fermentation. And then hopefully we can get down into some farmhouse blends with, you know, fruit and beer or fruited beer. But we've done some fruit beer, but mostly it's just straight fermented fruit.
Okay.
Is what we're getting into.
And you mentioned barrel. So what's your wood program look like?
So I grew up in Oregon. You know, I'm a transplant. I've been in Alaska for almost 10 years, but only lived in the southeast between Juneau and Sitka. But we get a lot of Pinot Noir barrels from a place where I grew up in Carlton, Oregon, called Dominio 4. And then my friends at Amalga Distillery in Juneau, we usually get their whiskey barrels. And then I also have a close friend that's the, you know, CEO of Anchorage Distilling. So we've gotten a few Anchorage Distilling whiskey barrels, which was pretty awesome to get to. So we kind of rotate between Pinot and whiskey. I do the, you know, wheat-based saisons and the Pinot barrels, and then stouts and barley wines and the whiskey. So that's pretty much it. We usually have about 8 barrels going at all times. We don't have a whole lot of space for our barrels at the moment. So we kind of just rotate through 8 different flavors and then kind of have them come out seasonally every quarter, essentially.
So what about your background? How did you end up as a commercial brewer in Sitka?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I don't know how deep you want to go into why I, you know, wanted to get into brewing and all that, but essentially I was a jock for most of my life, even in college and then past that. And after I quit the sport I was playing, I didn't really know what to do and moved back home to the wine country, Oregon. And, you know, there's a beer bar that opened up at that time. I was the first employee. So I started on the retail end, kind of serving beer, like the best beer kind of in Oregon. And then we kind of grew to the Northwest and just kind of featuring some of the best beer around that we could find on the West Coast. Got to know these brewers, understand the culture. And I was like, oh man, this is something I could really see myself enjoying. And all the people involved are, you know, like-minded. So I took an internship at a place called Grain Station where I just sat around and watched people brew for about 6 months all on my own time until they started letting me, you know, grain out and do some work here and there. And then, long story short, I kind of just moved. It wasn't working out, so I moved up to Juneau, and then I worked at the Alaskan Brewing Company for about 2.5 years, and that's where I got, like, kind of professionally trained, and I was lucky enough to get the job there in a need. And, yeah, I wasn't quite qualified, but jumped into it, knew enough to make it work, and then really got into it. And then I was lucky enough to get hired by Dellas Club Brewing Company as their first or second employee full time. So I was, I made beer there for years, and that's where I really got the flavor component down. Cause, you know, no offense to Alaskan or anything, but they, you know, they're a production facility. They're big. There's not a lot of creative outlet there. So I was kind of craving that, and Devil's Club, let me kind of make whatever I want. And then here in Sitka, there was an opportunity when, you know, the brewery I'm running now, Baranoff Island, went bankrupt. So I was like, well, Sitka needs a brewery. I love Sitka. So I kind of sold myself to some people with money because I didn't have any, and essentially got some backing, and we made it happen.
Did I understand you correctly? You said you've got a canning line. Are you canning currently, or is that something you're planning to do?
Yeah. No, we're canning currently out of the tasting room. And then, you know, because of our demand in the summer with tourism here, we're kind of short on volume. We're just supplying our tasting room. But then I'm going to use some capital this summer to expand a little bit. And then we got a new, it's a pretty small canning machine, but it's efficient. It's a Wild Goose Gosling 2.0. Anyways, it's does about 10 cans per minute. And we're now going to go into the stores on Sitka and then hopefully self-distribute via barges. But to Juno and then La Bodega is kind of our goal. And then see how that goes volume-wise. And if, you know, if the state and some of those people really like the product, we can go from there. But that's the first step.
Are you planning to can any of your specialty stuff, or is it strictly going to be your five flagships?
Both. We'll start with the flagships and then get those lined up. And then, you know, those are the ones that I think La Bodega, and then we'll see how that goes. But all the one-offs, we will definitely start canning and have it out in the tasting room and then possibly into some of the stores in Sitka and Juneau, and just see how it goes. You know, I'm still learning. I'm not one to just make a beer and tell people to drink it. You know, if it doesn't go well, or we get some requests or start to learn some data points that we need to change some stuff up. And then the fruit stuff we're looking to can too. So I'm really pushing. I think cider's great, you know, the gluten-free aspect. And then, you know, you drink enough beer, you get pretty full. And I think the cider and non-alcoholic options are also going to be down the road something we can as well.
So obviously your stuff should be fairly easy to find in Sitka. Currently, is it available anywhere else? Are you sending anything over to Juneau in kegs or anything like that? Or
we send kegs to a few accounts in Juneau. You know, it's just tough because we don't want to eat the shipping. Being on an island, it's just logistically kind of tough. So the accounts do pay for the shipping on their end, which is huge for us. But we have a couple accounts in Juneau. And then that's pretty much it. We'll send some beer up to events, though. And you know, there's like the AK Crafted coming up in November that we're really excited about, and we'll be pouring in Anchorage. I'm going to send some beer up to Fairbanks to the Boots and Brews that's on October 11th, if I remember correctly. So we try to go to at least, you know, events, and it's good for me to kind of see what's going on in the other part of the state as far as just not only what beers for people are making, but what people like to drink, and talk to some of the, you know, the beer nerds or whatever you call them that we want to make beer for, you know. So that's kind of it.
Have you been to the Haynes Fest?
Yeah, we go to that every year too. Okay. One of the best beer festivals around. It's a great time. But yeah, it's something even, you know, anyways, I go to it every year, and it's just a great time. I love it.
Well, if you're bored in February and you're looking for a good time, we have a pretty good the Frozen River Fest here that's held outdoors every February. So
how many breweries is that? Pretty popular with the breweries?
We'll typically have, I don't know, maybe between 15 and 20 breweries out.
Oh, that sounds
so
awesome.
We it's not the same. I mean, obviously all the local people are there, and then we'll have have some come in. It's kind of a rotating cast. It's not the same people every year, but we've had, you know, breweries come in from Fairbanks and Anchorage and the Valley and everything. So,
great.
Yeah, if you can swing it, it's a lot of fun. You haven't lived till you've poured beer at below zero outside in February. So,
I think that sounds like a lot of fun and something different than what, you know, we usually do, which is good for us. You know, that's part of the reason you run a brewery, is to just go meet new people and get the beer out. So yeah, that sounds really cool.
All right. Well, hey, Zach, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it. You mentioned you're going to be at those events in October and November. Anything else coming up that you want to make sure our listeners are aware of?
Yeah, you know, I think for us is just, we're going to be around. I mean, check out La Bodega in the next 6 months. We really are looking forward to having our product there. And then, you know, if you want to come to Sitka, don't be shy. Reach out to us. You know, it is a small community, and if you're interested in beer, the beer culture, want to know what we're up to, we always like people, you know, showing people the brewery, talking to them. Having visitors on this island is a great thing for us. So don't be shy reaching out. And then other than that, we're going to do a big Oktoberfest thing with some live music. The Rain Dogs from Juneau are going to fly out. But on October 5th, we're doing a our first annual Oktoberfest, and we made the fest beer of Marzen, and I'm pretty excited to see how that goes. But, you know, that's pretty much it. Just looking forward to those events and the canning operation and making some quality fruit fermentation and see what happens.
Sounds good. Good luck.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Thanks. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.
The Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District has a resource roundup, 1 to 3 p.m. September 20th at Northern Lights Espresso, with support for new and existing businesses, including planning, financing, locating employees, training your workforce, supply chain management, technical assistance, and more. It's free, no registration required. 907-283-3335 for more information.
In this month's feature story, I'd like to discuss a term from sociology, the third place. You might wonder what the heck a sociology term has to do with beer, but bear with me and all will become clear, I promise. The term third place was first coined by Ray Oldenburg in his influential 1989 book, The Great Good Place. The third place is a name given to social surroundings that are separate from the two usual social environments of home, the first place, and the workplace, second place. Examples of potential third places would be environments such as churches, cafes, clubs, public libraries, or parks. In his book, Oldenburg argued that such third places are important for civil society, democracy, civic engagement, and establishing feelings of a sense of place in the individual. If the first place is the home and the second place is the workplace, it's the third place that serves as an anchor for community life and facilitates and fosters broader, more creative interaction among people. Subsequent researchers have argued that a vibrant third place will display all or most of eight different characteristics. Number one, neutral ground. Occupants of third places have little to no obligation to be there. They are not tied down to the area financially, politically, legally, or otherwise, and are free to come and go as they please. Number two, leveler, or a leveling place. Third places put no importance on an individual's status in society. Someone's economic or social status does not matter in a third place, allowing for a sense of commonality among its occupants. There are no prerequisites or requirements that would prevent acceptance or participation in the third place. Number three, conversation is the main activity. Playful and happy conversation is the main focus of activity in third places, although it is not required to be the only activity. The tone of conversation is usually lighthearted and humorous. Wit and good-natured playfulness are highly valued. Number four, accessibility and accommodation. Third places must be open and readily accessible to those who occupy them. They must be accommodating, meaning they provide for the wants of their inhabitants and all occupants feel their needs have been fulfilled. Number five, the regulars. Third places harbor a number of regulars that help give the space its tone and help set the mood and characteristics of the area. Regulars to third places also attract newcomers and are there to help someone new to the space feel welcome and accommodated. Number six, a low profile. Third places are characteristically wholesome. The inside of a third place is without extravagance or grandiosity and has a homey feel. Third places are never snobby or pretentious and are accepting of all types of individuals from several different walks of life. Number seven, the mood is playful. The tone of conversation in third places is never marked with tension or hostility. Instead, they have a playful nature where witty conversation and frivolous banter are not only common but highly valued. Number eight, a home away from home. Occupants of third places will often have the same feelings of warmth, possession, and belonging as they would in their own homes. They feel a piece of themselves is rooted in the space and gain spiritual regeneration by spending time there. There are many venues that could potentially fulfill the criteria listed above. In fact, among the venues that sociologists have identified as active third places are community centers, senior centers, coffee shops and cafes, bars and pubs, restaurants, shopping centers, stores, malls, markets, hair salons, recreation centers, pools, movie theaters, churches, schools, colleges and universities, clubs and organizations, libraries, parks and other places allowing for outdoor recreation, streets, neighbors' yards, homes and apartments, and events like neighborhood parties, block parties, cookouts, barbecues, town meetings, and bingo. Almost anywhere can be a third place if it fulfills the 8 requirements that researchers have identified. I promised you that this story would eventually have something to do with beer, so let's bring the discussion back home. In the long list I just mentioned, bars and pubs were right there in the middle. In point of fact, the stereotypical neighborhood bar or pub is the quintessential third place. For a fiction example, just look at the TV series Cheers. The theme song makes it abundantly clear that it is meant to be a third place. Don't worry, I'm not going to attempt to sing, but here are the lyrics. Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? All those nights when you've got no lights, the check is in the mail, and your little angel hung the cat up by its tail, and your third fiancé didn't show. Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see the troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name. In its essence, the entire show was about a group of regulars hanging out in their third place. If the bar or pub third place has a big presence in fiction, it has an even bigger presence in reality. Walk into just about any craft brewery or brew pub in Alaska, and you will find yourself in a third place. Thanks to the restrictions on entertainment imposed by the state, you can be very confident that conversation will be the main activity. You will find yourself sitting or standing next to someone who you may or may not already know, and you will be sharing this social space. The craft breweries of Alaska are not places where morose, silent drunks stare into their glasses in the wee hours of the morning, nor are they loud and raucous spaces full of 20-somethings looking for some action. No, they have the wholesome low profile of a third place. Often when I'm forced to defend Alaska's craft breweries against those forces that would seek to restrict or even destroy them, such as competing bar owners and neo-prohibitionists, I find myself making an economic argument. I talk about how much money the state rakes in alcohol taxes, how many people are employed by the breweries, how much economic activity they generate, etc., etc. But there is also a sociological argument to be made. Third places are extremely valuable. Remember, Oldenburg argued that they were very important for civil society, democracy, civic engagement, and establishing a sense of place, all critical aspects of our modern social fabric. Besides their economic contribution, craft breweries and brew pubs are places where we meet and mingle as equals, converse and communicate, and get to know each other as people rather than partisans. In today's highly polarized America, with so many people retreating socially into what amounts to fortified tribal camps, anything that helps us resist this trend is valuable. As our social fabric frays, we need all the third places we can get to help knit it back together again, and that includes our craft breweries and brew pubs. If you'd like to discuss this in more detail, you can talk to me about it over a beer in my third place. We'll be right back with our next segment here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna.
Chill out and heat up your nights with Glacier Blues, your ultimate blues rock experience on KDLL, the heart of the Kenai Peninsula. Every Monday at 7 p.m., we bring you the icy cool sounds of blues rock legends and rising stars, from the soulful strains of B.B. King to the fiery licks of Johnny Winter. Glacier Blues melts your blues away with every note. Feel the passion, embrace the groove, and let the music take you on a journey. Glacier Blues, only on KDLL 91.9 FM, where the coolest blues rock reigns supreme.
We've got Drew Weber, the head brewer of Glacier Brewhouse in Anchorage. Drew, how are you doing today?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. So, head brewer at Glacier, how in the world did you end up in that job?
Funny story. I mean, I actually started here at the Glacier Brewhouse as a busser 21 years ago. And was enjoying busing, but winter came around and tips kind of slowed down. I needed a little more money and a keg washing position opened up. So I took that and did that for about a year and a half before going to Siebel Institute and getting my degree in brewing science. And then brewing here at the Glacier Brewhouse ever since, moving up to head brewer in 2017.
So 7 years, that's a pretty good run there at Glacier.
Yeah, it's been a fun time.
Okay, so I think most of our listeners have probably been to Glacier Brewhouse, but why don't you, again, in case there's any out there that are new to the area or not familiar with it, why don't you describe your operation there just a little bit?
Yeah, so we're the Glacier Brewhouse. So we're downtown Anchorage on the corner of 5th and H, and we are a brew pub. We opened back in 1996, and we've been brewing here on site ever since. The brewery has grown and changed over the years, starting out with just three fermenters, all the way up to where we have 11 fermenters now. Beers, of course, over the years have kind of come and gone and grown and shrunk in value and use, but everything's brewed here on site that you'll get draft, and we transport our beer and sell our beer from Washington State and Oregon State all across the state of Alaska.
And one of the unique things I always think about you guys is your famous wall of wood. So you want to describe that?
Yeah, so the wall of wood, we have, I think it's 35 oak barrels downstairs right now. Different barrels, we get them from all around the world, and they rotate. And we age the beer anywhere from 6 months to up to 10 years in those oak barrels. And the big thing that feeds is what we call our 12 days of barley wine. And so coming up here in December for 12 days straight, we put anywhere from 1 to 4 barley wines on tap. And that includes like Russian Imperial Stouts or Icebox, Big Belgians, those kind of beers that have been aged in oak. And we'll have, they could have been aged up to 4 months in beer in oak, but they could be aged up to another 10 to 20 years in steel itself. So it's a fun festival. It's a fun event that we do and been doing it for many years. Even during the year of COVID, we did a bottle release because the city of Anchorage had the restaurant itself closed. So we've been keep doing that ever since. I think it was 99 was the first year. Yeah, it's a great event. And
yeah, I think you guys typically you put out like 4 different beers each day, right? Something like that for 12 days. So it's quite a lot of different beers to try. When does it when's it going to start this year? Do you know the date off the top of your head?
It's somewhere right around the 10th. And then we've moved it around. Usually it starts on around the 10th and just kind of coincides with the weekdays.
Okay.
Try to start it on a Monday usually.
You guys are one of the few folks in the area where you can go and have a beer on hand pump, an actual cask ale. You guys usually have one of those on, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we try to always have a cask conditioned ale on tap, served off a beer engine and the true old fashioned, not pushed with CO2. So casks are fun beer because in all reality, they change every day. You know, as that beer oxidizes, as it warms up, as it goes a little bit flat, there's great flavors that come out at every stage of that. And during the 12 days of barley wine, we do a different, we typically do 3 different barley wine casks for that week, which are a lot of fun.
Yeah. Do you guys use a cask breather on those?
We have it's kind of a firkin area. We don't use the wooden breathers. Okay. We just have a hose that comes off.
Okay. I didn't know, you know, because trying to keep that. I didn't know how fast you go through them, you know, with to not have them spoil before. So you have to throw away half the cask.
Yeah. Typically here in the restaurant, in the summertime, especially with a lot of the European tourists, they get real excited about it. And a cask keg only lasts us 5 days.
Okay.
During the wintertime, I'm not afraid to waste beer if it's not tasting right. So we rotate through those easily within a week.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you like most about being a brewer? What really floats your boat?
There's so much about brewing that I love. One thing is at the end of the day, I have a product there that I can see, taste, and hold, and I'm very proud of. It's fun to take bare ingredients and an idea in your head and come out with something that has a lot of flavor, all the way down to just adjusting things as you're dialing in a new beer. It's a lot of fun to play with the ingredients and get it to exactly what you're looking for.
So the creativity is what you're saying.
Yeah. And you know, Alaska has such a diverse group of brewers that, I mean, we all get along real well. They're a lot of fun to talk to. The brewing industry is great up here, in my opinion.
So what do you like the least about being a brewer?
As a head brewer, I'd probably be, you know, the paperwork, doing taxes. That's the stuff I'm not fond of.
Okay. So what have you got? You already talked about barley wine, 12 days of barley wine coming up in December. Have you got any other big new releases that are coming out here in the next month or so that if people are going to be up in Anchorage for something that they should be sure to check out?
Yeah, definitely. Next Thursday, we'll be releasing our Oktoberfest, one we do every year. Every year we do a little different on the recipe. We have an Imperial Pumpkin Ale, love it or hate it. We do one every year, and that'll be released next Thursday. And the big event we're working up to here is the Great Alaska Beer Train. And that is October 5th. Take a rail ride from Anchorage down to Portage area and back. And it's a 6-course meal with 6 beers. Obviously, you can buy more beers if you want. And it's just a great trip. Awesome fall colors. I look forward to it every year.
Is there any tickets left for it?
As of yesterday, I've heard there's one left.
Well, by the time this broadcasts, I doubt there'll be any left then. But it sounds like it's going to be a great time. So.
Yeah, it is.
So where do you see yourself in 5 years? You still see yourself sitting there filling out that tax paperwork and making beer at Glacier? Or you got any other plans?
I love what I do. I love the Glacier Brew House. It's been a great company to me. It's been here for 21 years. So I don't necessarily have any giant plans for the future. Definitely want to grow in our brand both in the state of Alaska and out of the state of Alaska. And, got a great brewing crew right now that I look forward to working with over the next couple of years. So could very well say I'm very happy where I'm at.
Let me ask you one final question. Because of the new laws that went into effect in January, are you guys making any changes in the way that you are operating?
No, so we are a brew pub, a restaurant with a brewery, and going back, I think it was back in the 90s, early 2000s. We did all of our licensing, had a full bar license. And actually, when we opened, if I've heard right, Hobo Jim played at the Glacier Brew House. So we had all the license for concerts and stuff. But over the years, we've realized that, it's not something that really fits our restaurant. So one of the only times we really bring any kind of entertainment into the brew house is actually coming up on the 12 Days of Barley Wine. I always try to bring in a band of some sort to play Christmas music. So this year we have a bass or tuba band coming in on that first day of the 12 days. And they usually show up around 5 o'clock and play for about an hour. And it's real nice, that dark bass Christmas music through the restaurant. No, too loud, so you can't continue your conversation as a guest. But it's a lot of fun to have that livelihood in the restaurant.
Well, hey, Drew, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and bring us up to speed. I guess I'll see you at the Crafted Festival in November.
Yeah, look forward to seeing you. And yeah, stop on in, wave at us in the brewery. We've got the big windows, and my crew enjoys some friendly smiles. So.
All righty, sounds good. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Don't forget to tune in on Sunday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on KDLL 91.9 FM to catch the show Pickled Beats, where I, your host, Josie Oliva, will be playing you a curated set of music inspired by an obscure subgenre or an oddly specific theme.
For our last segment, it's time for What's Bill Drinking Now? As I mentioned at the start of Beer News, I'm recording the show quite early in September, so I haven't had time to try many new brews since the last show. Here's what I've had so far. Now that the tourists have more or less departed, my wife and I stopped into St. Elias Brewing Company for lunch. I had a glass of their newly released Summer's Over Saison and found it to be excellent. It's in the style of a French Saison rather than the Belgian style a la Saison DuPont, but it was crisp and delicious. Highly recommended. On the way out the door, I picked up a couple of 4-packs of cans, one of Czech Pilsner and the other of their Industrial Pipes of Alaska IPA. They were both great, especially the Czech Pilsner. I have long said and continue to maintain that St. Elias's Czech Pilsner is the best Pilsner currently being brewed in Alaska. A week earlier, we stopped at Kenai River Brewing for lunch, and I had a glass of Declination Coffee Stout. It wasn't on the menu, but I happened to spot the tap handle for this 9.5% beauty. Owner Doug Hogue told me that they hadn't listed it because they only had a 5-gallon keg left, and they didn't want it to sell out too fast. I doubt if it will still be there when this show is broadcast, but if you were lucky enough to spot it, you know how wonderful it was. Finally, I went to Anchorage for grocery shopping in the early part of this month, which also means I stopped at La Bodega, the best bottle shop in the state. While I haven't yet opened all the different beers that I picked up, I have sampled two of them. The first was another beer from Anchorage Brewing Company, Embrace Change Triple. I found it to be an excellent example of this classic Belgian style, weighing in at 9% ABV, golden in color with a nice white head. It was fermented in wood, so in addition to the usual peppery notes from the yeast, you can pick up oaky notes as well. Like almost everything from Anchorage Brewing, a flawless execution of the style. The second beer was also a triple, but this one was actually brewed in Belgium at the State Fuelen Brewery. It too was a lovely gold color with a big pillowy white head. It also has peppery yeast notes, but since it was not fermented in wood, it lacked the oak elements of Embrace Change. It was also slightly less potent, coming in at 8.5% alcohol by volume. Tasting the two interpretations of the same style together was very interesting and certainly allowed me to compare and contrast them. Both were exceptional brews. While their pronounced differences illustrate the latitude a skilled brewer has to imprint his or her own choices while staying well within the constraints of any given style. Well, that's it for this month. I hope you enjoyed the show. This month's closing thought is from another American philosopher, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said, "God created time and dough, and he cherishes fermentation as much as vegetation." Until next month, cheers.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
IPAs, ales and stouts, pilsners, porters too. Microbrew, homebrew, any craft you choose. Look before you. Might be the worst.